This is the Scholar Circle, scholarcircle.org. I'm Maria Armudian. The United States has a great track record in winning the technology race, but China is ahead with autonomous cars.
What explains this shift, and what role might government policy and priority have? Doug Becker explores.
I'm Doug Becker. The United States has great pride in its history as a technology leader globally. But in the race for the autonomous car, China appears to be winning. We explore the status of this race, the value of autonomous vehicles, and some of the reasons why China might be beating the United States to develop this technology, and what the U.S. might do to close the gap. We speak with Philip Wilcox. He's recently written and published the book, The Future is Autonomous, The U.S. and China Race to Develop the Driverless Car. Dr. Wilcox, thanks for joining us. First of all, what ultimately is the motivation behind developing autonomous vehicles?
Well, like I say, the motivation for me will be what really got me interested in the field was an accident back in 2012 in which I had a really bad fall. And this left me with, among other injuries, legal blindness. So I cannot see at all out of my left eye. And I have vision problems out of my right eye, somewhat tunnel vision. So because of this, I cannot own a vehicle, or I can own it, but I can't drive it because I can't have a driver's license. So that is something that me and millions of other blind and disabled people have to suffer with. The problem is, like, for the ADA, which is going back, I think, on 40 years now of being in service, that it's a really great law was passed. But I think that one of the big problems is why a lot of the people in the blind disabled community have, you know, lower wages, lower opportunities for education, things like that, is the transportation. And I think that the autonomous cars or self-driving cars, whatever you want to call it, will offer a lot of opportunity in that regard. So that's from my perspective. From the world's perspective, the U.S. perspective, would be a lot of it is maybe boils down to safety. As you can see, there's over 35,000 deaths per year in the U.S. alone due to traffic accidents, and 1.35 million worldwide every year are killed, and numerous other people are injured as well beyond just the deaths. So when you talk to any company in both the China and the U.S., they say the number one concern is safety.
Yeah, no, one group that has advocated for more self-driving vehicles is the Mothers Against Drunk Driving, and the emphasis in particular on the challenge of ensuring that drunk drivers are off the road, that their advocacy for Uber certainly has been motivated by that, and the self-driving car could even take that one step further. Do you think self-driving cars are safer than people driving themselves?
Well, for one thing, I have to say that right now, depending on where you live, you might have seen cars driving around with no one behind the wheel, or someone who is behind the wheel but is not actively monitoring the vehicle, doesn't have their hands on the steering wheel. But those vehicles are test vehicles. They're operating in a lot of cases in areas like San Francisco, Arizona, Pittsburgh, some parts of D.C., places like that. And right now, I'd say no, but it all depends on what vehicle you're talking about as well. So the trucking has actually been picking up a lot of steam recently, autonomous trucks. People think that that's really frightening if you see a truck driving by with no one operating it. But in some cases, the technology is easier that way, because if there is a situation in which a human driver is in front, is followed closely by the driver with the truck with no driver, then the technology is pretty simple. Assuming that it's close enough where no one can jump in and out or anything, but in that sense. So in that sense, technology is a little bit easier to manage. And you're also on highways, open highways. So there's less craziness. Like if you're in LA, downtown LA, trying to get anywhere, then there'll be lots of chaos going around. There's people, there's cars, there's whatever the case may be. So I think right now there's a lot of testing going on, and it's that the possibility, or not the possibility, the potential is just enormous to reduce the life. But the question you go back to is how safe is safe enough? And that's something that is very difficult to answer, because, you know, what are the benchmarks? Like, what are the standards that you need to reach that point? Because we don't have that right now. And that's something that would be a problem for, yeah, the industry.
And one of the things that struck me about the book and about this race for autonomous cars is how it appears as though China is ahead of the U.S., but when it comes to technology, the U.S. typically has seen as having some structural advantages. The vast majority of patents that are filed in G7 countries, you know, the group of seven developed countries, and in particular in the United States. And the comparisons between patents in the U.S. and China are really quite vast. What is it about this campaign that seems to be allowing China to try to make up for some of the structural disadvantages they have in the race for technology?
Well, I'd say one thing is that the difference between China and the U.S. is not as fast as you point out, given that recently China actually surpassed the U.S. in terms of patents filed for science and technology as of the last year. And I'm sure it's continued till this year as well. So that is something that's it's interesting to follow. I would say actually that China is not necessarily beating the U.S. in this race. I'd say the U.S. is still ahead technologically, because we've been, in terms of autonomous vehicles, because we've been working on it for much longer, companies in the U.S. So, for example, if you go back to the first DARPA Grand Challenges, that were just races in like the Mojave Desert to see who would go drive a vehicle autonomously for as long as they could. Those were from 2004 to 2007. And the first Chinese startup company for autonomous vehicles or AVs would be like 2016. So that's what, a 12-year head start. and a lot of the things, the technology, it gets better as you drive. So, you know, the more you can fine tune things and, you know, drive endless miles on roads and through simulations, the better the system will get. So the time is definitely a factor in this. But I'd say that for one thing is that the China doesn't have like these sort of these name brands like a Google or Amazon or things like that. You might have things like Alibaba and stuff like that, but so there's not the competition. So you can't just say like, sorry, there's no way I can compete against this company. There's no way I can even get on the road if you're trying to compete with these people. So it's a little bit more of an open playing field where everyone has an opportunity to succeed. But then you have the Chinese startup culture, which is very chaotic and competitive, backstabbing, whatever you want to call it. And if you can survive that, then you're in a good spot to succeed in China.
One of the key differences between the two countries is the role the government plays at, you know, promoting the technology, you know, promoting the companies. For the U.S., the government tends to play more of a regulatory role, whereas in China, the government is much more engaged in the companies themselves. Is this serving China better as far as at least closing the gap with respect to this technology and possibly winning this race?
Well, I would say yes and no, because for one thing, from the U.S. side, vehicles are one of the most highly regulated things in the U.S., like regardless of what you're talking about. And they have regulations at the state level for things like licensing and registration, liability, things like that. And then at the national level for the vehicles themselves, through like the FMVSS, the Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standards. So that gets a little bit more difficult when you talk about cars that drive themselves. Like, who is the driver and who is the vehicle? That's creates a lot of confusion within insurance and everything like that. But and so that means we're not going to rush in terms of creating the national standards. But for China, it's you don't want to have them sort of pick the winners or have them play too active, the government to play too much of an active role in industry. Like we saw, I mentioned in my book about the electric vehicles industry. And they were like very active and saying, we're going to make this many vehicles by 2010. And they had all these things, but no standards for anything, for the charging infrastructure, for anything. And it was a total mess until like Xi Jinping took full control in 2015. And like it made it much more difficult to get the subsidies and things like that. And it flourished after that. Now China makes the most electric vehicles in the world. But so you don't want to have like also state-owned enterprises. You don't want to have that the involvement because those are notoriously inefficient and corrupt. Whereas on the U.S. side, we have a lot of tech firms, VCs, and things like that, which are financing all these tech projects, including autonomous vehicles. And also the big tech companies like the Google, now Waymo, Amazon bought Zoox, which is a self-driving car company. And Apple is getting into the act as well. But knowing Apple, we have no idea what they're doing at this point. Mm-hmm. So Apple's super secretive that, I mean, they'll come up with something in a few years, it'll be ready to go, and no one has heard about it until then. Who knows what's gonna happen with that. It all depends really whether you want the government to be actively supporting an industry like autonomous vehicles or to take a back seat. I think the U.S. is in a sort of touch and go because we don't want to be overly regulated where the vehicles can't even get on the road even for testing, but you don't want to be no regulation at all where the companies can't effectively market their product and to consumers, commercialize it.
You're listening to Scholar Circle. I'm Doug Becker. We're discussing the race for autonomous vehicles between China and the U.S. with Phil Wilcox. So now you said you don't want the government necessarily picking winners and losers, but we're at a specific point in the relationship between the government and big tech, where the U.S. government seems to be prepared to regulate big tech and is much more antagonistic towards big tech than it had been previously. That might be a partisan issue in the U.S., but there certainly seems to be some echoes coming out of Washington about this desire to regulate big tech. Could that have an impact on the race for this technology?
Well, I'm not really sure about that because there's a little bit of two different sides. So for the regulating or controlling the big tech would be sort of the social media networks like the Facebook, Twitter, stuff like that, which are really going under a lot of attack from Congress. Whereas you could say that these vehicles would be big tech because they're essentially computers on wheels. They are very complicated technology, and some of them were produced by tech companies. So you could definitely make the argument that they are the big tech, but I don't know if they would fall directly into that category. And also because some of them are things like a GM, the Chevy Cruze, and Ford, the big vehicle manufacturers in the U.S. are also in this race as well. So those companies have typically gotten a lot of support from the federal government for things like bailouts and things like that. So it's hard for me to say whether they'll come into attack. I think that there will be a lot of questions related to the safety concern. Yeah, that will definitely be brought up, as well as potential cybersecurity. Vehicles could be hacked. But then we saw in a Wired article for a while that a Jeep Cherokee was hacked, and it wasn't at all autonomous. It was someone took control of it, and he like shut off the ignition while the car was on the freeway. So the car just stopped, but then was able to pick back up again when you restarted it. So it's not necessarily limited to these self-driving cars, but it's something that I think that the industry really needs to get a handle on this, because it's a legitimate concern. And I think the industry needs to have a policy and say, look, we're going to work together on this, so there's no problems. We have the best people in the world making these programs as safe as possible, things like that.
Now, one of the things that struck me in your book was this emphasis that we already have versions of autonomous vehicles, even in the cars that we're driving. You've got the different levels of autonomy. And so it's best to think of autonomous vehicles not as sort of dichotomous. It's either autonomous or it's not, but there's certain levels of autonomy. How far away, though, do you think we are from actually selling vehicles that were, I believe you call them level 5, as opposed to, like, for instance, what we have now, level 2, my own car has, you know, lane assist. That's, you know, that sort of thing. I think you call them level 2 with that. How much of a technological leap do we need to be where we're actually selling cars to consumers that don't require a driver at all? We can all sit in the back seat if we want to.
So I think like for one of these level 2 things like a Tesla, sort of like a misleading statement when they say the now it's even more misleading to say fully self-driving when it's still the level 2, which means you still have to have your hands on the wheel, still have to pay attention and be ready to take over at a moment's notice if something happens. And also, but I mentioned before, those trucks that are following directly behind the other truck, that is also level 2. Because you don't need to have a lot of information of crazy stuff happening when you're just following something very closely. Then that doesn't need a huge technological leap to get to that point. In terms of for the initial rollout, most of the companies say that the initial rollout will be sort of like an Uber for this autonomy. So there won't be the driver, but there will be the autonomy for the car. So that is the initial rollout is being actually already underway in Arizona and Phoenix and the surrounding suburbs by Waymo for Waymo One. And Chevy Cruise is operating a driverless taxi in the Bay Area, San Francisco. So that is actually already underway. I think that is the main thing, because the vehicles will be more expensive because of all the new technology, the LiDAR sensors and all the different sensors that I talk about in the book, the light distancing and ranging. But that is something that will be more expensive, but also the prices for those technology are falling. They used to be 10 times more than they are now because they've just been starting to use them in vehicles as of the 2005 DARPA challenge. That was the first time that that the LiDAR was used for vehicles. So they're very new for that. And so the technology will continue to decrease as time goes on. So, you know, in terms of the jump from 4 to from 2 to 4 or 5, I'd say I think a lot of the companies say they're at their 90% to 95% to the technology, but it's just that last 5 to 10%, which is the most difficult part. We have all these sort of edge cases, which are, you know, irregular cases, which happen sometimes, like someone running outside the road or a ball bouncing in front, all this stuff that is very rare, but is hard to program into a car. So I mean, if we program all of that in, that's the last 5 to 10% before you get to that point.
You make references in the book about the way in which autonomous vehicles could have an impact on our conversations on global emissions. What exactly is the link between autonomous vehicles and the possibility of emission reduction?
That's a very good point. For one thing, is that for it to make sense, if you're trying to run they call it the robo-taxi fleet, where you have a company who's operating their autonomous vehicles as like an Uber fleet, then it would make sense for them to all be electric vehicles, because electric vehicles have a lot less wear and tear, and they can last much longer than the internal combustion engine cars, which have a lot of different parts involved and things like that. Right now, all the vehicles are actually hybrid, because it makes sense for the different sort of like transmission and connections to make everything electric that way. That just makes sense from a technological standpoint and from an engineering standpoint to have it that way. But it would make sense to make them all electric. So that would be one thing. Another thing would be if the company is operating with the fleet of taxis, then there'd be fewer cars on the road. That would also improve traffic congestion, which is a big deal. And I'm in the DC area, you're in LA, which is a huge deal in both those places. Whether that will continue further on down the line is an open question. And also, even right now, we have Nuro, who delivers groceries to people's houses and other products. So a lot of people's driving comes from going to and from grocery stores, say over once per week, maybe 1.5 times per week, something like that. I forget the exact statistic. But if you don't need to take that trip and just get Nuro to deliver to you and to other people as well, then that would also mean you're not on the road. And those are electric vehicles as well. So those are some of the options that could come into play with that.
Interesting. We've just got a couple of minutes left. So do you think the incoming Biden administration is likely to be more supportive, give a little bit more government backing for the development of this technology?
Well, I think that it's actually more of like a bipartisan issue. This is a new technology development. And especially if you bring in China and say, look, we have a lot of anti-China sentiment right now, regardless if you're talking about Biden, Trump, the Congress, whichever you want to call it, or you want to talk about it. So if you say that they're, hey, if we don't get our foot on the gas here, pun intended, then China could get ahead of us. And then all of a sudden, we're able to import our cars from China now all of a sudden, because we didn't have our regulation in order. So that is one thing that could push things forward. And it's not necessarily a partisan issue. Like, there's no Republicans on one side, Democrats on the other, even right now when it's hyper-partisan. So that is something that bodes well, I say, for that. And also, when you have Trump going after certain states for their vehicle emission standards, California being the prime target, saying that their vehicle emission standards are something that he's fighting against, we should have that. But Biden is definitely going to get away with that. Move away from that. It says. Probably promote because one of Biden's chief concerns is climate change. Mm-hmm. And so he's definitely going to advocate for higher fuel emission standards. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that is definitely going to propel one, electric vehicles, and hopefully as well that will also bleed into autonomous vehicles as well.
That rare circumstance where competition with China coupled with a desire to deal with climate change might actually build a bipartisan consensus that can certainly hold out hope. We've been discussing the race for the autonomous vehicle, but the technology behind these vehicles, the competition between the U.S. and China, with Philip Wilcox, He has recently written and published a book called The Future is Autonomous, The U.S. and China Race to Develop the Driverless Car. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you to our guests and to you for listening. The Scholar's Circle team includes Doug Becker and Lillian Ng, contributing hosts, Ankine Agassian and Melissa Chiprin, managing producers, Sud Dongre, our webmaster, Tim Page and Mike Hurst, engineers and technical support. I'm Maria Armudian, and we'll see you next week.